Welcome to Malcolm Reed's How to Barbecue Right, a podcast where we talk about barbecue, share recipes, and discuss all things delicious. And now, here's your host, Malcolm and Rochelle Reed.
Hey, welcome back to the How to Barbecue Right podcast. I'm your host, Malcolm Reed, and we got Rochelle right across from my lovely, talented wife sitting over here.
That was very professional. Use my full name.
Use your full name. And then Tyler's out today, so we got Jacob over on the board. Before we get going, Shell, let me tell you about our sponsor, Schwenk Grills.
What is a Schwenk Grill?
Schwenk Grills is a portable 1,500-degree cooking machine. It uses infrared heat, which is perfect for cooking steaks to absolute perfection in as little as 3 minutes. You can also cook just about anything on a Schwenk Grill, from steak, lobster, even pizza, with all the accessories, with all the accessories that Schwenk has available. They're giving our listeners, this is the best part, they're giving our listeners $150 off by using the code HowToBBQRight. So we're going to have a link on here in the show notes. Go check them out, schwenkgrills.com. Don't forget that code HowToBBQRight. It'll save you some money if you want a 1,500-degree cooking machine. And it's portable.
That Schwenk got you a little tongue-tied this morning.
It did. That's okay, though. No one said I'm an excellent speaker.
You're a great speaker. You have a great voice.
So what is going on this week, Shell? What are we talking about on the podcast?
Today we're talking ribs.
Oh, man. You know I love on the bone. I do it on the bone. I don't do it. Now, boneless ribs aren't bad, but they're not ribs. I mean, you know. Unless you cook them on the bone and then pull them out and then make that Big Mac rib.
You've done that before. Yeah. It's pretty good.
It's real good.
So this week you did a recipe. It was Greek ribs.
I did. I want to do something different. So I was thinking.
I'm with you.
You know, we cook barbecue, you know, use the barbecue rubs, one of the best rubs out there. I don't care what anybody says. Puts that pretty barbecue color on it and judges love it. Used by all kinds of people all over the world. That was a shameless plug, wasn't it? But sometimes you don't want to eat barbecue. You want different flavors. And so that's what I was thinking with this. I was like, how can we cook a rib that, I mean, you know, pork St. Louis cut spare ribs. They're already delicious. They're marbled up, more fat in them. And these were just ribs I picked up at Kroger. But how could I make them non-barbecue-y, if that's a word?
Yeah.
And really get some good flavor on them so where you're tasting the meat. And so I started thinking about the seasonings that I had. I said, man, you know what? A little bit of spicy Greek ribs would be good.
Kind of Mediterranean direction.
And so you're not really, I wanted to cook them and not use wood. I wasn't trying to get like a smoked rib flavor. I wanted that charcoal flavor, that grilled flavor. And then I wanted to do something at the end instead of saucing them. Because when I think of Greek food, I don't think a lot of sauces. Mm-hmm. Mainly it's like vinegars and oils and seasonings and herbs and a little citrus. Yeah. That's all Greek flavors to me.
And to me, it's got a lot of like herbs and seasonings kind of cooked on the outside. It's more of a crunchy texture on the outside than like a saucy texture.
Yep. So you see marinades and stuff used a lot in Greek cooking, or based and things like that. So that's what the flavor I was going for. So I fired up the Primo and I used.
Well, first.
Oh, you want to talk about how I seasoned them first?
Yeah.
So to get that Greek season. So here's what I did. So first off, jerked the membrane off the backside because I wanted to get some flavor, some herbs and seasoning going on all sides. I didn't want that tough membrane on them, which I pull the membrane off all of them when I do.
Yeah, we did a little video this week, kind of how to remove the membrane. Yeah,
it's nothing. Grab your piece of paper towel, right? Just yank it up on the edge a little bit and take your time and pull it all off. And if it tears, so what? Because it's going to tear sometimes. Sometimes, like during processing, when they cut those ribs out, they'll slit it. And then it's never going to pull off as one piece. But if you'll use your paper towel, it lets you get grip. That's all that paper towel is for, to get grip and pull it off. But you can use a pair of pliers if you're handy.
Yeah. I remember a time, like it was been a long time ago, but there was a time when you did struggle a little more.
I mean,
to get the membrane off.
Get used to jerking it off. Or...
But using that paper towel,
it's
a game changer. Yeah. You
know, I've seen people run them underwater and use the pressure of the water to do it. And that works pretty good for baby back ribs. It don't work as great for St. Louis cut.
Do you tell a difference between those two, pulling the membrane off those two?
To me, it's easier to get it off a baby back. I don't know why. It wants to come off in one piece on a baby back. Well, that spare rib's been cut anyway because they cut the rib tips off of it. And it's got the flap of the you know, I guess that's part of the diaphragm or whatever. It's like skirt, inside skirt, but you know, it's the flap on that rib. And so you trim that back and sometimes it cuts the membrane and it's, and it kind of tapers down as it goes down the rack of St. Louis cut ribs. So it's, you know, it's a different piece of membrane, but it comes off.
And you don't have that flap on a baby back.
No, there's no flap on that.
It's just all the same.
Just smooth membrane. Yep.
So anyway,
so
you pulled them, got the membrane, kind of trimmed them up a little bit.
Trimmed them up a little bit. I usually dock the little narrow end off just because it burns up anyway. Not burns up, it's just not as good. I like a big even slab. So I like about 10-11 bones is usually what I go for. If it's got any fat on the top side, I'll knock some of that fat, you know, trim some of that thick fat off, or sometimes I'll just score it a little bit. But these are pretty clean. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot to do to them. So once you got that membrane off and trimmed them up just a little bit, they're ready to go. Now here's what I did. To get the seasoning to stick, you know, you see people call it a binder. That's just something you put on the meat to help your whatever seasoning stick to it. I used red wine vinegar. That's, you know, to me, that's kind of Greek. That's, you see vinegar's used a lot, and vinegar goes great with pork.
But acidity. You used apple cider before.
I use a lot of apple cider in barbecue stuff, like making sauces and stuff. It's all good.
I've seen apple you use cider, it as vinegar, a binder. But, a binder,
yeah, apple cider vinegar.
Yeah,
I've sprayed it on, you know, cooking briskets and stuff. When, you know, as a baste, I mix up a barbecue kind of marinade and use some vinegar. And I've done it with red wine vinegar. It used to be a spray that we would take to contest. It was olive oil, red wine vinegar, and we'd put some other stuff in it. And that was pineapple juice. And that was what, so I've been using that a while. I just never used it. The red wine is a straight binder. So.
What is the difference between the vinegars?
Like, is this flavor?
Yeah, it what they use to turn it into vinegar?
I'm guessing red wine vinegar is red grapes.
Yeah.
And white vinegar would be white grapes, maybe.
Or, and then apple cider, is it actually apples?
I don't know. I mean, I don't really. Research, yeah, you have to come back next time and tell me about vinegar.
I got Thousand Island ready to go.
I do know, like, the white distilled vinegar is probably just something they cook off and it's distilled. So I don't know. I don't know that much about vinegar. I just know I like it. I love that acidity it gets, and the red wine has a little bit, it's, you know, it's not as sweet to me as, say, apple cider vinegar, but it has a really good flavor, and it makes a great binder. So I just put some of that on the outside, rubbed it down, salt, simple salt and pepper, and then I came back with my spicy Greek gyro hero rub, and it's got a lot of herbs in it. It's got oregano and the parsley and some garlic and all these great flavors that you think of when you think of Greek cooking. Is in that seasoning with a little bit of spice. And that's something you usually don't see a lot.
It's jalapeno powder, isn't it?
Yeah, that's just the little difference in that gyro hero. It gives it a, what is that? But it's not hot. It's not hot by any mean. It's just flavor.
Yeah.
So it kind of goes,
it's a spice.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't call it hot.
No, it's not. It's not going to get anything hot.
I wanted to talk about the gyro hero because you've had that seasoning for a year or more.
So. Yeah.
And we really haven't talked about it that much.
I mean, you know, I use it a lot on chicken.
I use it on veggies.
It's great on veggies. You know, if you're thinking a little more healthier, it's a good option to give you some flavor besides just using a sweet rub.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have any sugar in it. That's the main thing. I wasn't trying to go for a sweet rib at all. This was all savory, herby, vinegar citrus, you know, the bite from using the vinegars and a little bit of the citrus. That was kind of what I was going for with these ribs.
So I did want to talk to you because you use salt and pepper.
Yeah.
You did salt.
I think all need salt and pepper, you know, pork needs salt, and I love black pepper. So I just thought that would go with it. And it gives a little texture too.
But you've been using your new hex clad grinders.
Oh yeah.
What do you think about those hex clad?
Dude, they're heavy duty grinders. It's a pepper mill or salt mill. And they work. Would I?
Are so they
sent those to me to use. No, I don't think I had any obligations to have to do any kind of review or anything. It just
showed up.
They just said, here, use them. So I started using them. And I mean, they're super heavy duty.
They're cool looking.
Yeah, they're cool. Would I pay that much money for a grinder? If I'm going to pay that much, I'm going to buy one of them Texas ones where I had it on my shoulder. Like
it's going to be a showpiece.
Yeah, it's going to be one that's 3 foot tall. I don't know. We need to check and see how much one of those cost.
Okay.
That'd be a cool grinder for me to bust out.
That should be a great Christmas present for you. Yeah,
what is this? It's a 3 foot grinder.
I was going to ask you because we bought some from Costco a couple years ago. We spent $20 on a salt and pepper grinder. They were like electric. You just turn them upside down and they start working.
Those weren't from Costco.
They weren't? I thought, were they from Sam?
I bought them off Amazon. That's the Amazon grinder you see everybody using in TikTok videos. Because I saw everybody using them with the light on it.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. So I bought them, filled them up.
How much were they?
$39. They're not expensive.
The hex clads are $200.
Yeah. It's probably going to be the grinder that'll last you a lifetime.
Do you nearly need it?
If these electronic ones with the light quit on me that I got from Amazon for $30, I'm tossing them in the trash and ordering some more. I just can't say paying $200 for some grinders.
They're cool.
They're cool. Now, if you just got some money to burn, check them out. They're great.
They do work. They're great. Yeah, they're heavy duty.
You know what happens, though? They got the little cap on them. And I understand why they do it, so you don't get remnants of pepper and salt on your counter when you set them back up. So you put them back in that. But it never fails that I forget to take that little cap off, and I go to grinding, and then I got a cap full of ground stuff. And I guess I just use it, pinch it, and use it that way and put it back in there. But I do that every single time I use them. Usually, if I'm going to use it in a video, you'll go ahead and take those off and set it on the counter for me so I don't forget.
I'm with you. I kind of want to throw those bottom things away because I do.
But it would get all over your counter when you know, that's just the way grinders work.
Yeah. So you got your Primo fired up.
So I did. So I got the rib season and hit them pretty good dose of the Euro Hero after the salt and pepper and just let them sit. Fired up my Primo. So I used, in this one, I used the whole grill. It wasn't like a two zone thing. It was like it is two zone because I used the heat diverter. So that kind of, if you fill up your ceramic grill or a Weber grill that you're running a diverter on, I mean, that kind of still is two zone because you're separating the direct heat from the meat. Now, it takes, I don't know, I probably put a big chimney of charcoal in it, and I use charcoal, and I'm probably going to catch some flack over using charcoal in my ceramic grill, but why? I did that for a reason.
What are you supposed to use?
Lump. Most people use lump.
Oh.
Yeah, most people use lump. But I knew I wanted it to burn. I wanted it to burn a while. I mean, lump does burn a while, but it burns a lot hotter. And lump's great in a ceramic grill or a drum because when you get through cooking on it, you can put it out and you can reuse it. Well, I wasn't planning on reusing these briquettes. So I put a pretty big chimney of briquettes in there and got them hot. And I sprinkled a few more briquettes in there just to make sure I had enough fire unlit, just around. Because I had a plan for this charcoal at the very end, too. And that's why I used the briquette in there. Could I have used it lump? Yeah, it probably would have burned a little bit hotter. I don't know if I'd have had any more left at the end of it, the way I cooked them, because it was, five and a half hour cook. It wasn't just real fast, but it wasn't super long. It was about an average rib cook. So I started, once I got my pit up, I was trying to run it about, 250, 275, running over. I like to cook ribs.
So you put no wood?
No wood at all. One, I don't really know what wood they use in Greece or Greek cooking.
Yeah, yeah.
I really don't. I don't know. maybe it's olive wood or something. I don't know. But I didn't want them smoked. I was going to let whatever smoke flavor I got from the coal be my smoke. But the goal wasn't to produce, like a hickory smoke rib or pecan or anything like that. I didn't want that. I was just going for a really good grill flavor on them. And that was what I was thinking with the charcoal. And that's what I got too. It was excellent.
So you could do this cook on pretty much any pit.
You could do it on any pit. Now, the end part is where it's going to change up depending on your pit. Like, say, if I was doing this on a pellet grill, I'd still have to fire up a charcoal grill to achieve the end result I wanted. Because
this is a pellet grill cook.
I
don't feel like this.
You could do it. It just wouldn't. You wouldn't get the charriness that I was wanting on these ribs.
I think you could do it on a Weber kettle. You could do it.
You could definitely do it. You could definitely do it on a kettle. You could even do it on a drum because you could get that drum hot to do it on too. Probably couldn't do it on the Outlaw. Unless you had a way to put your open coals. I mean, on the hog pit you could because you could throw some coals underneath there and do it a little bit. But it would be a little more challenging. It would still be easier to if you've got a small charcoal grill like a Weber or PK or something.
Yeah. An egg,
anything like that. But the Primo worked great for it because here's what I did. I took those ribs, I got my grill going with the deflector plate, so it had some indirect heat going, and I got some color on the outside of them. It was probably...
You went an hour.
And then flipped them, because I wanted them to cook even, and man, they were beautiful. I hope it comes through on the video how beautiful those ribs, they were before I wrapped them. And I knew, like when you wrap something, it changes the color of it. I don't care what it does, because you're at that point, you're really kind of braising it in a tight package. So what I did was I got the color I wanted on them on both sides, flipped them, and then when they looked right, I had some good pullback on the bones, which you could see. They weren't too charry on either side. It just looked like a really good slab of rib.
They were ready to
eat.
Yeah,
like, they'd have been a little tough, but they would have been ready to eat right there.
They'd taste good.
You'd got to gnaw on them a little more. So I took double layer full. Like when I'm wrapping ribs, I always do a double layer full. That just gives you a little more insurance that your bones aren't going to poke through the full if they were to tear, moving them around on the grate or something. Just holds the heat, holds the moisture in.
It's a little insurance.
Yeah, and it's just a little extra sheet of full. It's no problem. So I put them on there. Now
you made a
whipped up
barbecue vinaigrette.
Yeah, it was kind of. I really should. Yeah, I don't know what I should have called. I mean, barbecue vinaigrette's fine, but it's not really barbecue because my barbecue vinaigrette, I put rub and I put a little sauce in it, and it's got some other things.
So this one was just a Greek vinaigrette.
This is kind of just a Greek vinaigrette, pretty much. Had the red wine vinegar in it, had some olive oil in it, had some lemon in it, had a little honey just to tone it down. That was the only sweetness I put in it. Then I put some fresh herbs in it. It had oregano. It had some
parsley
and some thyme. Yeah, that was the three fresh herbs. And I kind of cheated on that. And I bought that little Italian herb pack at Kroger, a little bubble pack or whatever, you know, and chopped them up.
That's not cheating.
I ain't cheating. That's fresh herbs. Yeah. What else are you going to do? Buy it? I mean,
you just didn't buy a whole bundle of
thyme.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just bought them all together, which is plenty for this vinaigrette. They go in there and you mix all that up and drizzle in your olive oil and it kind of emulsifies it a little bit. And that was my liquid for my wrap. So I hit the rib with that.
So I want to talk to you about the wrap liquid. Mm-hmm. Like, is there any rules to creating a wrap liquid? Like, is there stuff you have to have, stuff you
don't
have to have?
I don't think so.
Could you put anything in there?
Pretty much.
Could you get creative and crazy?
Yeah. I mean, I don't, as long as it's some, a lot of times you have to add liquid. Sometimes, you know, I wrap, I don't put nothing in there. So I think it's kind of, you know, use your own imagination on it. If you wanted to use something juice, just know if you put a lot of sweetness in it, it will still burn. It can still burn on you in the wrap. So I wouldn't dump, I mean, you know, but I say that we put a ton of brown sugar and honey and, but it can't, there is times where I've had people send me pictures where I guess their grill was hotter than, didn't realize what grate temp was according to dial temp. And it just scorched the bottom of them. I've seen it happen. And so you have to keep that in mind, like make sure you know what temperature you are. If you're putting something sweet in there or if it's too close to the fire, they can burn up on you in that wrap.
Have you ever just used like butter or?
Just plain butter and nothing. No, I probably always hit them with some kind of baste or something.
If you're going to put butter in there, you're going to
pour a little apple juice or something. But, you know, just be aware of what you put in there and the heat on it. But, I mean, you could use juices, beer, wine.
Whatever your little heart desires.
Yeah, whatever your heart. Yeah, I probably wouldn't put alcohol, like too much alcohol. I don't know what that would do. It leaked out, caught on fire. Put a shot of whiskey or vodka or something off in there. You might start a fire, but because you know, it never fails. Some of it does leak. So there's going to be there could be little tears or something could happen. But I had a plan for my wrap juice too, though. See, so once I put the ribs down, I kind of hit them on one side, flipped them upside down, took a half a stick of butter, put on the backside, basted that backside really good. And then just wrapped them up to where I could get back in them and check the temp. That's the key with wrapping ribs. You always want to wrap them to where you can get back in them easy because you want to check to see if they're done. And so when you open them, you can probe them in between the bones. And then if you need to close them back up, you can. So that's kind of why I wrap them the way I do.
Yeah, you can't over just, and then, sometimes I wrap them and I just.
Yeah, it's all wadded up, wrapped up tight, flipped all over, and you can't get back in them without wrestling them. And I know that when I cook my ribs in the wrap, I always want to go bone up because gravity pulls against them when they're laying there. And if you go bone down, it could separate a lot easier. So I think it does better holding it.
You're not putting
in.
Resistance, I guess.
On the bone. And then it lets me have, I can visually see where I need to probe them, but I can also get that fat rendered on that top side by being down too in more of the liquid. Seems to help it render a little better. So there's a theory to, I don't know if it's a fact, but it's theory that I cook them like that. And that's how pretty much everybody cooks them. Beat side down when you wrap. So they went back on and I was watching. I didn't temp them. I probably should have temped them there because I'm guessing they were 175, 180 internal by the
at
time
that
I
point,
wrapped.
Before you wrap.
And then so I put them back on and checked them in about an hour and they were dynamite. I mean, they were about where I wanted them. And so what I did then is I took them off the pit and opened up the full where I could get into it and poured that juice up that was in there. Now, normally I don't use any wrap liquid that we have left over. I usually just let them sit in that liquid and rest for about an hour. But I had a plan for these. I wanted that wrap liquid. And then I took my cooking grate off. Now, get you some grill gloves because that thing's going to be fire hot. It's 275, 300 degrees at that point. Take that off and then carefully take out your heat deflector on a ceramic grill and stoke your coals a little bit. Put that cooking grate back on because we're going direct heat at this point. And I'm going to let that grill recover. I want it to get up. Ideally.
Yeah, what are you shooting for?
525 to 550, pretty hot, like steak cooking hot. Yeah, you want it to get pretty hot. And if you need to have you a safe zone on that, if you're cooking on a separate grill, go ahead and make you one, but you'll probably only be able to do one at a time. And that's what I did each rack at a time so I could watch it close anyway. But my goal here was to create me a char grilling effect. I want the meat to be, it don't necessarily have to be in direct contact with the flame, but I want pretty intense heat on it because I'm trying to char it up. I'm not glazing them. I'm charring it up. I'm getting that sear on the outside. I want to see that browning reaction where I got some of those dark spots on it and it cooks those seasonings that I put on there. And they're ugly when they come out of that wrap anyway. They look beautiful going in, they're ugly coming out. But once you do this char grilling method,
it all back.
Oh man, they look fantastic.
So, and so you use that wrap liquid as your base.
And I did. So that gives me, it's got half a stick of butter in there.
Such a good idea.
And it's got some olive oil in there. And you got all your other flavors in there with it. But as you start basting and that stuff starts dripping down over those hot coals, you're going to get the Whopper effect, flying broil, like Burger King. It's going to do it. And that's what's going to jump up and kiss that meat and give it the color and the flavor that I want from that coal.
And it smells amazing.
Man. Have you ever been, and I know you have, I'm just talking to the folks out there, to a fair and walked around and the first thing you smell is that gyro Italian sausage stand where they're doing the onions and the peppers and you get all that aroma of those meats.
They're typically cooking over direct coals.
Yeah. They've got, a lot of times. I mean, they've probably got like a flat top doing the vegetables and stuff, but they're getting some coal action going to get that smell going. That's what it smelled like in there. And it immediately makes my mouth start watering.
Yes, it's good.
I get like Pavlov's dog or whoever that is. Man, that's good.
So I love the idea of saving that wrap liquid.
Yeah.
Because to me, that's a perfect base.
It really is a good base for that. Now, I think it would be too much.
Could you do it with a different wrap liquid? Could you do it with your brown sugar honey?
See, I don't think you would. I mean,
it's a whole different
thing. Yeah, it's a whole different thing. Yeah, because like say normally I would do barbecue sauce and I would throw the rib. Like if I was going to char grill just some barbecue ribs, I would, take them out of the wrap, put them over there and hit them with the sauce and then start burning and turning and charring and caramelizing that sauce. You do have to stay with it when you're doing this because you've got intense heat underneath it. You might have to get them off the grill fast. I recommend staying gloved up, have you the cotton gloves on, some nitrile gloves, have you some tongs handy if you need them, something you can grab the ribs with. But you got to think, you have cooked these ribs super tender. So you can't just go throwing them and,
You got to be delicate.
You got to be kind of delicate. You got to use some soft hands with them or they're going to come apart on you. And that's what a little bit of resting does. It gives them a little time to lock up and it gives you time to get the fire right. Now, if I would have done this on the Weber, it would have still been fine just setting off the grill and get my Weber grill going and have it, think about where, you need enough coals underneath it so the rack gets heated evenly. That's why I said it'd be kind of tough on a two-zone fire because it takes a pretty good bit of coals, to give you that heat you want to char that whole rib up.
You need a big grill.
Yeah, you need a pretty good size grill. I mean, 22-inch grate's fine for it. You're just going to, if you put all your coals to one side, you're probably not going to have enough room to do them evenly. And you want that char, you want that heat to be pretty even on them. But, man.
How long did it take to char grill?
Not long. 10, I would do like, so what I started doing is like a minute and a half on each side. And I turned them pretty good often because it's for a video. I didn't want to screw it up. So I'm looking at it. Okay, it's starting to develop. Flip it over and let that side go. And then flip it back and baste it some more. And I babied them. And so it probably was 5 to 10 max. Getting them how I wanted them. And that's staying with them and turning them.
And you're basting them the whole time.
And I'm basting them the whole time. And I did one slab at a time, you know.
And you were doing a few little, like you would sprinkle a little more sauce
and a little more season it. Yeah, because I wanted it. Yeah, that's what really smelled good. When you start doing that and them seasoning start hitting that fire, it builds up that flavor on it. But let me tell you, those were some savory, delicious meat. You tasted the pork, but it all went with it. It was just, man, I was really shocked at how good ribs were that way.
Those are the best ribs I've had in a while.
In a while. But they were different. I mean, they were so different. It wasn't like eating barbecue ribs, smoked ribs at all.
Liked them.
Yeah, just because it was something different. But I like to, you know, I like to play with different flavors like that.
I'd order those ribs in a restaurant. Mm-hmm.
It got me to thinking, so you know how they do the little flanking ribs and they do them kind of Mexican style?
Ooh, yeah.
And, I mean, you could do that with some pork ribs too. You know, maybe do a marinade like a Mexican style marinade or something, and then season them with like your
grande gringo or
something like that. But it's like, what do they call it?
Doing the Mexican
tablitas or something like that.
You're talking about doing Mexican style to a full slab of ribs?
Yeah, to a full slab of ribs.
I thought you were talking about doing Greek style to flanking ribs.
Oh, you could do that. Oh, that'd be delicious. Yes. Yeah. That would be that same sauces and
stuff. Yeah.
I mean, normally I do them like, I think it's considered kind of Asian, Korean style.
Yeah.
And they're really good, but it's got a lot of that soy and a lot, you know, your honey, hoisin and all that flavor. So it's a different depth of flavor. But gnawing those little ribs off the bone are fantastic. Might do some Greek flankings.
I like that. If there's Mexican spares too.
Yeah. Yeah. We got some ideas to play with. We do have Cinco coming up, so I got to come up with
something. Ooh, yeah. That's only.
I had an idea and I told Tyler about it. Now I can't remember what it was.
You're supposed to write these in your notes.
I think I did.
Okay.
I got my notepad right here.
No, not something that you're going to write down on paper and forget about.
In my phone.
Your notes.
Okay. I got you.
I got to help you, Grandpa.
Then I had to get my readers out. Then I had to turn it on like visually impaired mode to get the screen big enough. I tell you, man, I'm getting old, Shell. My eyesight just ain't what it used to be.
So I wanted to talk to you about those ribs were delicious. They were, I mean, knocked out of the park good. They weren't sweet at all. Savory. Like you said, you tasted the pork.
It got me to thinking, if you were going to serve those to guests or family as a dinner, mm-hmm. what do you think would go good with it?
I don't know. Some grilled veg, maybe?
That's kind of what I was thinking. So if you grilled up
zucchini, squash.
Onion, like red onion and stuff. Maybe eggplant, something like that. Something you don't normally get that you see associated with Greek food.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I was thinking. I was thinking of a way to see what, like a tzatziki or something, like some kind of something to dip that rib in that would really give it some
creamy element.
Yep.
Would you serve some pitas with it?
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's kind of what I was going. It was like, you could take that rib and then get that bone out and then put it on a pita. It'd almost be like a rib gyro or something, you know, don't chop it up. Just leave it like a rib. You cut them into bones and take the bone out and then put that on the pita and then put all the other good stuff with it, the tzatziki and the lettuce and the tomato and the vegetables and all that. And you got some good eating.
That would be delicious.
I guess you could serve it with like couscous or something like that.
Yeah, you could. Rice. You could really serve it with anything. Those ribs are, I mean, I've gotten to the point where I'm not crazy about barbecue ribs just because we've cooked them mm-hmm. so much.
Unless I do them dry.
Unless you do them dry. But the competition style, it's real sweet. It's not my favorite.
But when you get some flavor and you taste the meat, that's when they're really good.
Yes. I love the savory rib. And I like the fact that it was char-grilled.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking, do I like char-grilled more than I like smoked?
Well, so here's what got me to thinking. Those ribs looked so good before I wrapped them. What if we had just, you know, went to straight grilling them and burning them and turning them and basting them and burning them, no wrap at all, and just see if we could get them to where they would get to a stage that was really tender enough to be a really enjoyable rib, but you would get even more of the grilled flavor by never wrapping them. That's an experiment I want to try and see how, you know, see if I can keep from burning them up.
So are you talking about char grilling them the pretty much, entire time?
Well, I'd probably start them off like on an indirect side to get that base flavor locked and to get the fat to render it. Because once you get them to that stage, like up there to that 170 to 180 degrees internal, you don't have real far to go, but that's usually the critical stage of getting them really tender. And so I would imagine they're going to be a little bit tougher rib, but could you start char grilling them at that point and moving them around enough to where they would get tender and, you know, but still you really get that depth of flavor from cooking them over those live coals the whole time.
Without burning them up.
Yeah. There'd be a lot more grill action doing it, but I think
that'd be fun.
But that's what I've got been thinking about the flanking, you know, this flanking style too, because you can get pork flanking ribs. They cut spare ribs like that too. And I think Sam sells them. It's little pork, you know, strips of riblets. It's almost like the riblets that Applebee's used to sell. I guess they still have them.
That'd be really good.
Those were like flanking pork ribs, just cooked in sauce.
So we also did a video about how you select ribs in the package. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How do you get the best?
Well, it takes going through ribs. Like when you go to a store.
What's the best store? What's the store you go to for ribs?
I mean, just any everyday cooking ribs, probably Kroger. I mean, it's just handy. Walmart has them. You know, sometimes I can find some decent ones at Walmart too. Sam's, sometimes. I'll tell you what, our Sam's has been slim, man. I went in there the other day looking for some lamb to cook. I couldn't find a rack of lamb anywhere. They didn't have hardly any beef. They didn't have hardly any pork. It was weird. It was real weird. I don't know if it was just the time of day. It's like I'm going there, you know, before lunch. It's not like it's bright and early. As soon as I get it stocked, it was just, I guess our Sam's just does that much traffic. But
yeah, I've heard that HEB is.
Oh yeah. But we ain't got one.
We ain't got one.
That's like my dream grocery store to have. Every time I go to Texas, I have to go in one. They're awesome. But, you know, what I like to look for is individually wrapped ribs. That's kind of my indicator that I can see that slab of ribs. If I pick it up, I'm looking to see how uniform that rack is from end to end, with the big thick end, if it's super thick and then it tails down to nothing or just looks odd shaped, I don't want it. I want it to be fairly close thickness all the way down the rack. Then I'm flipping it over and I want to see straight bones. Just because it's a visual thing for me. It makes them easier to cut if they're straight. Now, it started from competition cooking because we wanted the straightest bones to go in a box. But even if I'm cooking them at home, I still want to see the straight bones because they just look, but they cook better when they stay straight on the grill. They don't curl up. It's easier to cut them without that bone having that 45 degree angle on it as it goes down. I just think it looks better. And so I want to make sure the pack is sealed up good. I don't want to get an airy pack to where it's, you know, it looks like it's open and there's a lot of juice and
it's
stuff
like a
in it.
Rib snow globe.
Yeah, I want it to be super tight in it. That, to me, it means they're a little fresher. Now, it's very rare that I find fresh, not froze.
I was going to say, you
ribs at the Kroger, Walmart. They usually always, you know, come in froze. And that don't bother me too much as long as I can see them. I mean, would I like to have all fresh pork? Absolutely. But it's not always the case to get it like that. Sometimes, you know, Sam's did have them there for a while. You get some really good fresh ribs there, but they're all thawed. You don't buy frozen ones at Sam's, but they usually don't even have the St. Louis cut. It's either a whole rack of double rack or three pack of baby backs, but they've changed some of that now. I think some of them are going to twos and even singles at Sam's. So when they have them, but I look for the single bone racks. Do I have a,
and you now, will dig through.
A little bird told me, the name may have been Mark Williams, that my man Kevin down in Panama City, the butcher shop down there, you know we love to get meat from, has a new brand. These must be a comp rib if Mark was messing with them, but he says it may be the best tasting St. Louis cut spare ribs he's ever cooked.
So it's a brand?
I don't even know what brand it is.
You don't even know?
But I heard, so I'm going to have to, I need to talk to Kevin. But I got to see what this is. If it's a new thing, I want to try it. You know.
So would it be a breed, a brand?
I don't know.
You don't know any details.
Yeah, the bird didn't tell me that.
You just heard something new.
He just told me he cooked them. He had our friend Alonzo came in, and they did a little brisket tutorial with him. And I guess he got some of those ribs. Kevin wanted him to try them or something, and he cooked them. And he said Alonzo told Mark, there wasn't a person in Texas that could cook slab of ribs that tasted like that. Now, I don't know if they're that good, if that's Mark blowing smoke, but it made me want to try a daggum competition rib. I ain't going to lie. And he's telling me about it. It's sounding good. I was like, I've had some good ones. I tell you, the Prairie Fresh Prime ones have been awesome here lately. And we can get those at our local butcher shop, Primo. He has those.
So are there different grades of pork?
Not,
you know how like beef has the grade?
I think it's more branding in pork. Like, they're not going to say, oh, this is choice pork or select or prime or Wagyu pork. I mean, yeah, and there might be some people. Pork. There might be some people claiming that,
or
like Prairie Fresh Prime, like that. You know, this prime pork, but I think that's just a marketing ploy. Is it better? I mean, I'd have to say some of it's a lot better than the others because there's just some that's just to me it's like standard pork,
commodity.
Yeah, kind of. But I mean, the heritage bred stuff is usually always tastes better. Now, where you have trouble in it, where you have trouble with it is. The uniformity. Sometimes it's, you know, Compart does a great job with their, you know, how they grade theirs out. But some of them, it's like, you know, you might get a butt that's huge and then the money muscle is perfect, but then it's, you know, just cut weird or there's just different specs that they do it on. And I guess it depends on the breed of the hog and the farmers and then where it's getting processed and packaged. There's a lot of variables that goes in it.
Do they ever age pork?
I don't think so. I don't want it aged.
You want it fresh.
I don't know much about the processing part of pork, but I want it fresh. Like if you kill that hog, I know he's better right then. And maybe we need to get somebody here to tell us on the processing, how that works.
I'd love to know.
I don't think you want your pork aged. Definitely not no 30-day pork. They say, I mean, they claim that once it hits a grocery shelf, it's good for, you know, several weeks or whatever, but. I know I busted some open. Whew, it'll clear a room sometimes. And you think you can wash it off, and then it's still. I was like, that's going to garbage.
What are the most expensive slab of ribs you've cooked? And I'm not talking about, like, everything that went into cooking. I'm talking about the meat itself.
What's like the most, purchasing it?
Yeah. What's the most expensive that you've?
That's a good question. I don't know. Do you have any idea?
No clue. I can't think. I mean, I would guess it's some of the heritage stuff that you've cooked.
I think it's some from Snake River Farms, if I had to guess.
Pork?
Yeah, because they had, what do they call it, Carabuta pork?
Yeah.
It was supposed to be like the Wagyu of pork, and I bought some of those and cooked them, and they're pretty expensive. I mean, for pork, but I mean, Compart, I mean, it ain't cheap.
Yeah, especially when you pay for shipping.
Eden Farms was one I cooked. I cooked some of their pork. It seems like it was pretty high. Any of that heritage stuff is going to be a little bit more expensive. The Cheshire stuff, but I'm pretty sure it would have been the Carabota. Would have been the most expensive. Now, was it worth it? I don't think so because it wouldn't have been something I'd use in a contest. Tasted great. Tasted amazing. But it just wasn't like at the time I was trying to find the perfect competition rib and it didn't meet the criteria.
Now would be a great time for us to pay some bills.
Heck yeah. The How to Barbecue Right podcast is brought to you by our friends at Primo Grills. Shell, did you know that Primo is the only ceramic grill made right here in the good old USA?
What? Are you telling me that Primo Grills are proudly crafted here in the USA, ensuring top-notch quality and support for local craftsmanship?
I sure am. Plus, Primo Grill not only delivers mouth-watering flavor, but because of their innovative oval design and superior ceramic construction, Primo Grills also gives you a ton of cooking versatility.
Whether you're smoking low and slow or searing a steak to perfection, Primo Grills gives you the consistent heat distribution for mouthwatering results every time.
What she said, y'all. Y'all visit PrimoGrill.com and check them out.
This weekend we went camping with the quotation mark, which means we rented a cabin. Yes.
That's,
in the woods.
That's about close to camping. I can do a camper trailer or a barbecue trailer.
Have you ever?
Far, you talking about pitching it, like going and pitching a tent and sleeping on the ground?
Have you ever done that?
Yeah. Up there in Arkansas, a bunch in my 20s.
Yeah, in the 20s. When you didn't,
care that you crawled off in a tent and sweated all night.
Fought mosquitoes.
I've slept in some rough ones. I've slept down there in Spring River. I mean, it's been some good tent nights down there, but not anymore. I think once you start having back trouble, like late 30s, you give up sleeping on the ground. Like,
yeah.
They say sleeping on the ground's good for your back. I'm going to take their word for it. Yeah. I'm not going to find that out. No, I'm a cabin man now. If I could afford to go camping, surely I can afford to rent a cabin. It wasn't like it was super expensive.
No. That's a beautiful part of Arkansas.
Oh, man. We were at Mount Olive. And if y'all have never heard of that, it's a little hidden gem up there.
Well, don't tell them.
Yeah.
Normally, you take a grill with you.
I do. I didn't take one this time.
Yeah.
So we cook our meals or whatever when we're there. Well, there's no place to go out to eat,
yeah,
really.
There's nothing.
There's one called Anglers down the river at Sillamore, but we didn't make it down that far. But, we always plan to cook. And so, we was grilling something. We did. So we took some burgers, some dogs, some steaks, some sausage, just stuff we can grill fast after we've been out all day. And
normally you take
a figured they would have a grill. I mean, most of the time, the cabin we stay in has a charcoal grill. So all I need to do is bring me a fire starter and some, royal oak or something like that and be ready to roll.
So do you bring a chimney or do you just bring your royal oak?
Usually I just do old pyramid stack and fire it up. I might even squirt some fluid on it. I've been known to. It's somebody else's grill. But no, so we get there and they didn't have a charcoal grill. They had a gas grill. And I don't, that's one thing. I don't do a lot of cooking on a propane grill. I don't even own one right now. I used to have a Napoleon back in,
whatever
I did some videos.
That?
Pretty sure I gave it to Jamie's dad. He had had one. Right. He had an old grill that burned out, and I had that one on the porch. And you like for me to make ribs for sometimes, and I replaced it with the Memphis pellet grill, I think. So that's why the Napoleon had to go. But so I don't even own one. But I would, the grill market for propane grills is probably way bigger than the charcoal grill market.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think, most average households probably have a propane grill. Over a charcoal grill. I would be willing. The reason why I say that is because I've been to several of these hardware shows, and the majority of the manufacturers there are propane grills. It's a huge market. And so, go to Lowe's or Home Depot, these big box stores. You can see what grills they have the majority of. I mean, they're going to have some charcoal grills, but the majority of them are all gassers.
That's a good thing. They're fixing to start rolling them out. We'll go up there and look.
Just see how many.
Yeah, what's the market looking like now? Because I imagine there's a lot of pellet grills, too.
Yeah, no, there are. But I just think, when you see higher-end outdoor kitchens built, they always center them around a propane grill. And, propane grills have their place. I'm not dogging them. I don't mind cooking on them. I mean, I don't think I can. I know that I can't cook a good slab of ribs or a pork butt or a brisket or something on propane as I can, on my smoker or charcoal grill set up for indirect heat.
When you had that Napoleon, you did a recipe for ribs on a gas grill.
Yeah, and we got a ton of questions and people watched it.
And they looked beautiful. They were tender.
Might as well cooked them in the oven.
They tasted like nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, you had zero flavor from the grill in them. Well, because you don't have any charcoal. You don't have any, there's no any kind of wood product at all.
I still remember that. I was like watching you cook those ribs the whole time filming.
He knew what he was doing, didn't he?
That Pavlov's dog, my mouth was watering, and then finally got to take a bite, and I'm like, ugh.
I've never done an oven recipe. I wonder if I could cook ribs in an oven that looked that good. I mean, I know they're not going to taste that good, but would they look that good? That might be a little self-challenge right there. But I fired up that what was it called? It was called the Barbecue Expert or something, wasn't it? What was it called?
Professional, the pro.
No, did you get a picture of it?
No, I got a video.
Okay. I'm pretty sure it was called the Grilling Expert or something. I don't even know who made it, where it came from. It was a standard, four-burner propane grill.
Fired right up, no problems.
Fired right up. Igniters worked on it. And it looked like it just been sitting outside, so it must have been a pretty tough grill. Grates were fairly clean in it. I got it good and hot. And first night I cooked steak, and
it was delicious.
I want to say,
no problem with that steak. Those steaks at Walmart.
Yeah, no problem with them at all. They were good. Then the next night I fired it up and cooked hot dogs. We did colossal dogs because we did chili at some other folks' cabin. And so we made a big old pan of those colossal dogs. Man, those are good hot dogs too. Nathan's, if y'all don't sleep on the Nathan's Colossals, it ain't just some regular O'Brien Juicy Jumbos or, Bar S Red Franks. These are some serious hot dogs.
It's that's
It's a frankfurter. Whatever a frankfurter is that.
I was
it's
so
more
excited.
Sausage the dog.
I was so excited about those colossal dogs. I was like, oh, that's the one. Even more than the steak, I was looking forward to.
Really? Did you get one?
No.
I'll cook you some this weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get one this
weekend. We're going to watch SEC tournament and eat some colossal dogs.
You also did some burgers on it.
Burgers were fine on it too, man.
One thing I always bring with me camping, no matter what, blue plate.
Oh, yeah. We had the blue plate.
We did go over to somebody else's house and have a burger. And that burger was killer.
Better than the propane grill? That burger was cooked on a Hasty Bake grill.
It was.
So, because I could immediately tell. I could tell, man, that's charcoal right there.
And your grill or your burger that we had the night before cooked on the propane grill.
Yeah.
It was good.
It was good. Yeah, it was a fine burger. Yeah.
But the one cooked on the charcoal that we had the next night was way better.
I thought so too. I was like, man, Lawson got me on that.
But Lawson didn't have the blue plate.
But you know what? So I was behind the bar and I made my burger over there that night. I didn't even look at the jar. I just had a plastic knife or whatever. And so I was sticking over behind it because it looked like a mayonnaise jar. It had a blue lid set beside it. So I was like, oh, yeah. So I got it, slathered it up, put it all on mine, put my pickles on there, my burger, little tomato and lettuce. And then I took a bite. I was like, hold on, something ain't right. And then y'all said, that didn't even, and Lawson said, let me get the real mayonnaise out of here. And he had some Dukes, and which, it's okay. Duke's okay. And then he's good. Blue plate by any stretch. I don't care who says it is.
But what did you put on your burgers?
I ate Miracle Whip on mine, and I couldn't tell you the last time I ate Miracle Whip. And it was still a good burger, but right away, it's like, what is this sweet mayonnaise? It doesn't even taste like mayonnaise. It's like sweet cream or something. I don't know, with a little vinegar or something to it. I put salad dressing on my hamburger. That's what I did. That's what I ate.
I had to use something that started with a D, ended with a Ooks.
And it was edible.
And it reminded me how good blue plate is.
Yeah. You missed the blue plate.
We
should have brought ours.
If you're choosing mayonnaise this weekend, make sure you choose blue plate.
Quality mayonnaise since 1927.
Hashtag, what is their hashtag? Spread the love.
I think so.
Spread the love. Now,
from New Orleans, Louisiana.
So I was thinking we're going to ship Lawson. He said he couldn't get it.
Yeah, he said everybody was there. It's like, where's your, what is this blue plate? They never heard of blue plate mayonnaise up there in Arkansas. Yeah. I was like, I mean, come on, for real?
I figure we'll ship them up.
We're going to send a case. Yeah, I got to send a case of blue plate. We got to buy a case to keep up here where we can send out one episode to somebody.
Sign it and send it.
Blue plate mayonnaise. Quality mayonnaise since 1927.
We also took some country pleasing up there. They don't get country pleasing up there.
That blew them away. They didn't know. So Lawson and Shane, they do a whole sausage making deal up there. It's coming up. Is it next weekend?
I think so.
I don't know if it's going to be at the spice shop there in Melbourne or if it's going to be somebody's.
I don't think this is like a public event.
Oh, it's not?
No.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. But anyway, they're doing some sausage making. I thought it was like a class or something. But they're doing sausage making. And he swore that, that country pleasing was as good or better than any of the sausages. They had people come in and teach them how to make. And he was like, this is store-bought sausage that tastes like it's old-fashioned. Made at home smoked sausage.
I haven't found a better smoked sausage I liked.
Connect is good, but it ain't country pleasing. It's a little bit smoky. But if it's on that, it's on that kind of par. Now, there's another one that a buddy of mine brought me a link of. It comes from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And I can't never remember the name of it, but it's kind of a local sausage down there. I think it's getting some distribution in that area, kind of that coastal region of Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fire sausage too. You'd have to look it up. But if you Google smoked sausage Hattiesburg, Mississippi, I bet the brand will pop up. But I think they do carry it in some grocery stores, but they have a really big sausage shop there too. Now, Country Pleasing has one too. But if you go looking for Country Pleasing sausage where they're at, you're probably not going to find it because the name of the place is Cooper's Meat Market in Florence, Mississippi. Ain't that what y'all, mm-hmm. what do y'all call it? Is it Cooper's?
Yeah, Cooper's.
Yeah. Right there on Highway 49, and they've got an awesome sausage shop there, but they sell other stuff besides sausage. They've got a full meat counter. They do a lot of prepared stuff.
Is it the little butcher shop?
Does it say what brand of sausage? I'd have to look at the logo. That's it. Yeah, what's it called? The Little Butcher Shop?
Little Butcher Shop.
That's it. It's in Hattiesburg?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got a blueberry, a pineapple, an apple.
That's it.
And a jalapeno and cheddar.
Can you order that online?
I think so.
Yeah. Give them a shout out. If anybody wants to do the compare, y'all order up some.
You tried it and you liked it?
Yeah, it's, Charles brought it to me. It's absolutely delicious. It's really good.
Better than Blue Plate? I mean, better than.
I hadn't compared all the flavors side by side.
Yeah. But it says
it is right there. If not, yeah. It's good. I would highly recommend them.
So last week you asked me to do some research on Thousand Island dressing.
What'd you find out about the Thousand Island?
Well, it's an American dressing, which doesn't surprise me at all. It's based on mayo. That's like first ingredient. And it always has ketchup and vinegar.
Ketchup and additional vinegar?
Ketchup and vinegar. On all the recipes that I've seen, it had ketchup and vinegars. And then most of them had sweet relish, finely diced onions, and seasonings.
Vinegar, relish, seasoning. All right.
What do you write?
I'm going to build a Blue Plate version of Thousand Island.
Okay. I love
it. And I'm going to use it for something. I don't know what.
Hey, St. Patty's Day is this weekend. You can do
a Reuben or something?
Reuben, yeah.
That'd be perfect.
So some recipes add boiled eggs. Some add hot sauce, some add Worcestershire, some add pimentos, some add garlic. Yeah. You know, there's different variations, but all of them, basically the base is mayonnaise, ketchup, vinegar.
That's pretty close to
a remoulade.
Big Mac sauce.
Yeah.
It's kind of close to it. Yeah, it's kind of, you don't have the Dijon or the spice level that would make a remoulade, you know?
Yeah.
Or the horseradish, but.
The dressing's name comes from the Thousand Islands region along the upper St. Lawrence River between the United States and Canada. So it's way up there in the northeast area.
So, I gotcha.
And there's a couple different origin stories.
That's not the kind of islands I was thinking about.
No.
That is not the kind of islands I was thinking, hoping that sauce came or dressing came from.
So one origin story is that a fisherman's wife created it for a dipping sauce for fish, and a famous actress, I mean, this is like 1900s, yeah. Like early 1900s, tried it, liked it, got the recipe, and then started making it and sharing the recipe with her friends, and that's where it came from.
So how did it become put on salad bars?
Another origin story said that the proprietor, and this is like 1900, the proprietor of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel had a chef that started making it for him, and he put it on the menu
A Thousand Island?
Yeah, as the dressing at the Waldorf
Astoria.
They
also did that other one. It's like the Waldorf salad or what is
it? Yeah, it's got like nuts and stuff in it. Yeah. And then another origin story says that people were taking vacations from New York to that area.
Okay.
And grabbing, you know, some homemade dressing, taking it back to New York with them, and then it started spreading from there. So
makes sense. I was hoping it had like a calypso sauce, but you know how we get that sauce down in the Bahamas, where it's like or Jamaica.
It's similar.
It's very similar. It's like ketchup, mayo, and then they use like Scotch bonnet pepper, hot pepper sauce, or something like that, and a little vinegar or something to sweeten it up.
I like the calypso sauce a lot because it's mayonnaise.
Yeah,
kicked up spicy mayonnaise.
That's right. I'm gonna make my very own Thousand Island for something.
I don't think it would be hard.
It would be good on a burger.
Oh yeah, I mean that's what's on like In-N-Out's Animal Burger. Yeah. That's what's on a Big Mac. Yeah,
exactly. Special sauce. That's exactly what it is.
Before we wrap it up today, I got one question for you.
All right.
This is from David
on the community
on the Let's Get to Cooking community. If you want to join, we're fixing to do an Easter giveaway.
We are.
I think we're giving away knife sets.
Oh, I think it's a nice set and they're going to have a signed board with it too.
Yeah.
That'll be a collector item right there to get me one of them. We'll find somebody to sign it.
George Strait's right there.
Right there.
Okay. So David, he's doing a 23-pound brisket for Saturday, which must be ready to travel by noon.
A 23-pounder. That's trimmed or untrimmed?
I don't know.
Okay.
Saturday
noon.
Okay. He usually cooks at 235 degrees, but he won't be home from work between 6:30 and 7 on Friday.
He's wanting to know when he can put it on?
Yes.
He's got two options.
Well, he's wondering, can he get it done if he puts it on at 7
on Friday?
Not
low and slow. There's no possible way. He'd have to crank the heat up.
Could he do 250 and get it done? Probably That's not. His question. He's going to have to Probably go not. Higher than 250?
I would think so.
And do an overnight?
Yep.
What would you
He's going to stay up all night with it? Because, so a 23-pounder, so, I mean, we used to cook some 18 to 20s, and they would take 16, 17 hours doing them slow. Now, I'm not talking 225 slow. I'm talking like 250 slow. So if I was him, what I would do, I would trim it for one to get that, to see if it, how much fat on that 23-pound brisket. It's going to have a lot. Then he can go hot and fast if he wants to do a hot and fast brisket, like a drum style brisket.
Yeah, but you're going to have to stay up with it all night, right?
Yeah. But he could get that done. But he could get up at, you know, 4:35 and get that one done in time to give it even a little rest if you do it hot and fast. But what I would, depending on what kind of grill I'm assuming, I'm guessing he's cooking it on a pellet grill. And I wouldn't do the hot and fast on a pellet grill because you're going to have no flavor on it. It works on a drum because you get drippage and you do get grilled flavor. But unless you got a drum or, you know, a stick burner that's really putting some flavor on it, the hot and fast probably not going to work as good on a pellet grill. I hadn't had somebody tell me that's the best brisket there, right? Can you do it and get it cooked? Absolutely. But you could do it and get it cooked in your oven too. And it's going to, you know, that's what you're going to get hot and fast on it. I would do a trim on it, take out what excessive fat it does. I'm thinking if he's 23-pounder, he's probably going to get it down to about 18 pounds. And I'd probably put it on a stick burner before I went to work on Friday. Or not a stick burner, a pellet grill, if he's cooking it on a pellet grill. This is how I would do it.
Okay.
I would cook it Friday. When I got home, I would wrap it, and I'd put me a probe in it, and I'd pay attention to it in the middle of the night because it may be done at 5 a.m. But it would get it done sometime early Saturday to where I could get give me time to, as soon as it gets done, I'm going to not vent it. I'm just going to make sure it's hitting the temp, and I'm going to put it in a cooler. And I'm going to let that dude sit till noon on Saturday. Because if I got it in the cooler at 7, 8 a.m., I'm gold. And it's going to give me that 4-hour rest. And then it's going to be ready to serve that afternoon. It would hang out till 4 or 5 o'clock that afternoon and still be fine.
Because he said he's ready to travel by noon. So I'm assuming
he's got to travel with it. So as long as he comes off in that, 7 to 10 window, he's golden.
7 a.m. to 10 a.m.
So look, so just say he put it on at 7 o'clock. Friday morning, gets home 6:30, 5:30, something like that.
Normal work day.
Normal work day. It's going to be time to wrap it, but I'm keeping it low, like 215, 220. It'll be time to wrap. And then he could decide if he wants to let it cruise at that 215, 220 temp, it could cruise all the way to 7 a.m., another 12 hours, no problem. Once he gets it wrapped, put a probe in it, or he could crank the temp up a little bit and get it done probably before midnight one. And then it would rest. Oh, that's probably too long a rest
that's
there.
Too long
I'd keep it low. I'd keep it low all night and let it go. There's no problem that being almost a 24-hour brisket, being that big. I've cooked a 14 to 16 hours before. It's almost like 45 minutes to an hour per pound low like that.
And if he doesn't trim it and keeps it a 23-pound brisket, it'll
definitely take that.
It'll definitely take that, yeah.
Every bit of it.
Because
that's your options.
I think that's a really good plan.
I think it's going to be better, that long, low, slow cook and with a good rest.
It's not an overnight brisket. It's an overworked brisket.
It's an overworked brisket. Yeah. I mean, you're talking 23 pounds. That's going to be close to 24 hours if you do it right, low and slow, and then rest it a little bit too. But it's going to melt in your mouth.
It'll be delicious. It'll be
absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
That's the best. I mean, that's how I would do it. I'd cook that dude Friday morning.
That'd probably
and
be
if I was worried for time, I wouldn't be scared to season it Thursday night and put it in the fridge, keep it cold, and then just put it straight cold on that pit that morning, set that pit at 215. If you got super smoke, give it some extra smoke. Make sure you got enough. I mean, a pellet grill is going to run 8 to 10 hours on a whole load of hopper anyway, so you ought to be home in time to check it if that's the way he's doing it. Now, if he's doing it with a grill where he's going to have to play with the fire, this ain't going to work at all. This only works in a set and forget mode.
Yeah.
If you got to adjust the fire, his best bet's going to be separate hot and fast. And is it going to be as good? I don't think so. Could he get 6-7 slices out of it for a blind box? Absolutely. But from tip to tip, is that thing as good?
Cooking it.
Have you cut it down to where it's about the size of this notebook pad right here? If y'all can see that, that's about the size they cut that down to and cook it.
Legal pad.
Yeah, legal pad size. You can cook that one in 5 hours easy. But a 23-pound brisket ain't no joke.
A hoss.
That's a hoss. And it needs time. That's a full-grown cow.
Yeah.
And it needs time.
That's a full-grown brisket. Well, Malk, that's all I have for you today.
All right. Well, y'all check out the community.
Yeah.
Go to Facebook. If you don't already follow it, but there's some great, you know, great Q&A, great conversation, great place to share. Or if you need anything in the barbecue world, just talk to people in there, man.
It's a great resource for me to get ideas for the podcast. Heck yeah,
there's no dumb questions. You know, we don't allow a lot of bull mess in there. We try to keep it, you know, keep an eye on it so nobody's going to rip you. If you say something dumb, hey, I say something dumb every day. So don't be scared of that. I'm going to post something, but y'all check it out. And
we really don't have that problem. We don't have a lot of haters in there.
Because we don't hate. We love everybody. As long as you like blue plate and barbecue. I don't care if you don't like blue plate.
Blue plate, barbecue, and booze.
Yeah.
We can get along just fine.
Hey, we do have a wild game cook-off we're going to be at next weekend, Senatobia, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. It is called Beast and Brews. It's called the Beast and Brews.
Is there brews involved?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
What is the brews aspect of it? Is it like
pull
a...
it up and look.
Okay.
But the Beast is wild game, and they've got big game, small game, fowl, which is that anything that flies or can run and almost fly, or they got anything that swims, and it's all, and then they got...
Y'all are entering every...
Bloody Mary and Margarita.
And y'all... So get this.
We've entered every bit of it.
The Buck Junkies, which is Malcolm's outdoor cooking. He's doing it with Mark Williams and Jamie Williams and Mikey Dyer, but...
And a lot of other associate Buck
Junkies. Yeah, and a lot of... Anyway, they're all cooking. They've entered a team in this contest. And guess what Malcolm's cooking? Out of all the categories, he picked the margarita
and
the Bloody Mary. He's like, y'all handle the grill.
I'm going to be grilling, but I'm going to be cooking stuff to pass out.
Yeah.
I've got a plan that we're going to, there's no telling what I'm going to bring. I might bring some wild boar. I might bring some elk. I'm going to look in my freezer and see what I have, and we're going to try it. So I'm going to have a grill there where I'm doing up some stuff.
It says it's a beer festival, craft beer tasting.
That's what I'm talking, Shell.
Okay.
And wild game.
So it's downtown Senatobia, March 23rd. There will be live music all day and apparently craft beer tastings.
I think.
Vendors.
Our buddy Trent Ellis is going to be there. If y'all seen him on TikTok, he's going to be there hanging out with us.
Oh, cool. Really?
Yeah. Oh, we're going to go turkey hunting, bro. It's going to be a great weekend, y'all.
Well, if you would like to connect with Malcolm, it's How To BBQ Right on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and of course, YouTube. If you'd like to connect with me, it's Miss Southern Shell on Instagram and TikTok.
All right. Well, we appreciate y'all tuning in today, and we will be back next week to talk more barbecue and all things delicious. We gone.